살림 안저 나만 저 갈스네 아 최선에 동아를 줘고 걸와 강아지를 줘야지 아니 땡기 대화 기디네 디기여시 도고를 자고 그래 지단 디 토야라 안저기 산지 고방세지 산지 토바이나 지단 디니 안디 아 땡기 대화 기디나 대화시 임발라 디안 ཁྱི ཕྱད མམ གསི ཁྱི 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 ཕྱད མམ གསི ཁྱི ཕྱི
Good afternoon. So this morning we continue to look at the presentation of the three principal aspects of the path. And we spoke about this wish that we have to experience a lasting, stable happiness, a happiness that is free from all forms of problems and difficulties. And so therefore, if we manage to achieve the state of Buddhahood, then we will have fulfilled that goal. We will have achieved lasting, stable happiness that is never interrupted by even a moment of suffering. Moreover, the quality of the special quality that Buddhahood brings is this unique ability to be of incomparable benefit to others, inconceivable benefit to others. So how does one then go about developing Buddhahood? Well, there's a sequence of first the mind of definite emergence and bodhicitta, and then Buddhahood is attained. So how then does one develop bodhicitta? So bodhicitta, the mind of bodhicitta, is the wish to attain enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. So it has the two components of wanting to free all sentient beings from suffering, and therefore to lead them to enlightenment. So when this mind arises within oneself in an uncontrived manner, in other words, it doesn't need to be specifically generated, when it arises spontaneously, naturally within oneself, then one is said to have generated bodhicitta. So this uncontrived aspect was the same as what we heard for the mind of definite emergence. The mark for having achieved definite emergence and bodhicitta is the same in that mind, when it arises spontaneously in an uncontrived manner, then one has achieved that mind. So how then to actually develop the mind of bodhicitta? So we started to look at that this morning, and we said the first step, a preliminary, is developing an impartial mind, an unbiased mind, a mind of equanimity, a mind that is not near to some and distant from others, but sees, but is equally close to all beings without exception. And thereafter, one starts with the cultivation of the recognition of the relationship we have with all beings. So this is presented in the terms of seeing that we have this mother and child relationship with each and every sentient being. Thereafter, you reflect on the kindness that our mothers have shown us, and progressively develop that understanding to see the kindness that all beings have shown us repeatedly since beginning this time. And then when this mind has arisen in us in a powerful manner, naturally the wish to repay the kindness of these beings will arise within us. And this is because when we see how kind others have been to us, We know that it's unsuitable, it's inappropriate just to ignore their needs and continue to act just for ourselves, or for ourselves first and foremost. Rather, the wish to repay the kindness will arise in a powerful way within us. So this is as far as we look this morning.
With this
motivation of wanting to train or to develop ourselves in order to be of benefit to others, then we need to continue the sequence that we have started to present. And so next will come the minds of love, compassion, and special intention. Having this wish now, in terms of the sequence of our meditation, we've now generated a wish to be of benefit to others, to repay the kindness that they have shown us. So this leads us then to thinking, so what is it that others want? What is it that they don't want? So in brief, others want to experience happiness. They want to experience only happiness. So this is the case really for all sentient beings. No being wants to suffer at all, but only wants to experience happiness. So this we can see in the non-human beings we can observe in animals. They are motivated to achieve happiness. From the moment they're born throughout their lives, their activities are done to achieve happiness. This we can also see in the human world, and we can see in our own life, that everything that is done is motivated in order to achieve happiness. Whatever one does, whatever one says, it's motivated to achieve happiness. And this isn't just activities that seem like kind, nice activities. It's everything is done to achieve happiness. So including activities or speech that brings harm to others, or thoughts that bring harm to others. So if one lies to others, deceives others, harms others, this is all done with a wish to achieve happiness. With this understanding that all beings want to experience happiness, we then develop this mind within ourselves, developing this wish, may all beings experience happiness, may they experience true, lasting happiness. We develop this mind again and again and again, and this wish, wanting others to experience happiness, this is the meaning of love. This wish, wanting others to be happy, or developing this mind of love, is something we need to do continuously in our meditation practice. In this way, we'll strengthen our familiarity, our habituation with this mind of love. And through strengthening the familiarity and habituation to it, it grows in strength within us. That would be the meaning of strengthening the familiarity with the mind. So whilst we are only doing this in meditation, the impact of this doesn't only abide in meditation, but as we become more habituated to this way of thinking, it will remain more and more and more present outside of our meditation, so when we're going about our daily activities. And with this mind then more and more manifest within us, it will then have an impact on how we communicate verbally to others, the way we interact physically with others. And in this way, we start to see that this wish for others to be happy transcends being just a mere wish that we can all sit here and agree we want everyone to be happy, but it transcends just this mere wish to where it has a powerful impact within our mind, and the strength of mind then leads to a change in our behavior and our way of interacting with others.
The way
meditation works in the context of love, or really in the context of any meditation topic, is that through repeatedly going through the same meditation again and again, then our familiarity, our habituation, our familiarity with this mind, our habituation to it, grows and strengthens within us. So this then means that when we sit down to meditate on love, for example, if we have a stronger familiarity with it, it becomes, we'll be able more easily to meditate on love with not getting so distracted, and meditate on it more easily. It will have more, and more quickly will the mind of love will arise within us. As we continue with our meditation, then not only will it arise more quickly, but it will abide within us in meditation longer. And as we continue to develop familiarity, then after our meditation and we go about our daily activities, then the impact of that mind will remain more manifest within us. So this is all showing how the familiarity with the objects of meditation, in this case love, this is growing and growing within us. And then when it starts to impact us outside of our meditation, this is when we will see, maybe we could say, physical manifestations of our meditation, in that we will see the impact it has on how we relate to others, our way of speaking, our way of acting. Because at the moment, if we haven't purposely generated a strong mind of love, well, we have a mind of love. It's weak, but we have this mind of love. We'll know someone, or we'll meet someone, or see someone who is suffering tremendously, or we'll see something on the television or in a documentary, and the mind of love will arise, wanting them to be happy, wanting them to experience no problems or difficulties at all. And then the program on television will end, or we'll turn the corner, and we will forget about that. But if we have developed a very powerful mind of love within us, then the impact of that, of seeing that same person or watching that same documentary, will be very different. Then the wish, not just for them to be free, for them to experience only happiness, will arise, but the thought, I need to do something about that. I need to fundraise, I need to see what spare clothes I have that I can send, etc. And then one engages in action to help those in need. And this we can see in the world when there are various crises in the world, whether it's natural disasters or refugee crises following from warfare. Then aid agencies mobilize, populations send money, send goods, etc., all to help people in desperate situations. So this, where the mind has been developed, the mind of love has been developed to a stronger degree, then oneself will willingly, wholeheartedly want to do more to fulfill this wish, to enable others to experience happiness, and to experience only happiness. Without such a strong wish, then the strength of mind will be missing to that would lead to taking action, or to lead to a change in the way one communicates. With the strength of mind developed through meditation, then one will wholeheartedly, willingly engage in beneficial activities. Meditating on love, then, or love that we meditate on, is the wish that others may be happy, in particular stable, lasting happiness. And this then leads into the meditation on compassion. And the link between the meditation on love and compassion is that when we generate the strong wish, may all beings experience only lasting, stable happiness, then this implies that that which is interrupting, stopping them from achieving happiness, namely suffering, that needs to be eliminated. In order for our wish for all beings to experience lasting happiness to be fulfilled, beings must be freed from suffering. And the wish wanting others to experience only happiness is the mind of love. The wish wanting others to be freed from suffering, this is the mind of compassion. So again, that's the mind of love is the wish for all sentient beings to experience only happiness, and the mind of compassion is wishing for all sentient beings to be freed from suffering. So these minds then need to be repeatedly cultivated in meditation. And as they go stronger and stronger and stronger within oneself, and we've heard about this process of how it will start to permeate, these minds will start to permeate our daily activities, then when it's starting to have this kind of powerful impact, then it goes beyond just the mere wish, may all beings be happy, may all beings be freed from suffering, even though it may be in a very powerful manner, to coming to the point of, I take responsibility to help others. I take responsibility to help others achieve lasting happiness. I take responsibility to help others to be freed from suffering. So this comes about thinking how we here as meditators who are now making some progress in terms of our mental training, we're seeing the great impact and benefit this is having. And we see therefore the ability that we have to be of benefit to others. So in other words, we're seeing the preciousness of this opportunity, and knowing the preciousness of this opportunity and that the skill and ability that we're developing within ourselves, we see that it's inappropriate to let it go to waste and not help those in need. So here we're generating this mind of special intention, which is specifically a mind that takes responsibility for the welfare of others. This mind of special intention follows love and compassion. And it's a mind that takes responsibility to fulfill the wishes that we generated when meditating on love and compassion. So here, if we haven't developed love and compassion in a powerful manner, then we're more likely to respond to a situation where we see someone in need, and some love and compassion may arise for them, but we don't actually do something, because we think, oh, someone else can do it. I may have the ability to help in this problem, but someone else can, or I don't have time now, I have many other responsibilities, or some other reason. Whereas if one has developed these minds of love and compassion sufficiently strongly enough, taking responsibility for the welfare of others, one will immediately want to help. This is one's opportunity to help alleviate someone from suffering, to help someone progress towards achieving lasting, stable happiness. So this is the mind of special intention, the mind that takes responsibility for the welfare of others, and it follows from developing the minds of love and compassion in a very intense and powerful manner within oneself.
で、当にもついな、順茶るこれ。じゃ、当にもついな、あの時、まし、人間人と言わんちゃんば。だ、え、日清部、朝南だ、せてて、ちゃんじゅせんけ、ぎゅるでてて、でね、人ば、しのゴムチェ、まんぜでゴムどす、ばれんじのゴムチェ、あの時、さんのでやしゅちゃせろじ。で、朝南だせ。じゃ、朝南だせ、だたんげじぎん、ラブ、ぎゅるでてるごろわだ。じゃ、だんげじばいな、だんげ、 제발하다
三月了，三月三的，现在，现在三月三。跟那个呢？过来，那就咱们学个嘞，当。辛苦了，辛苦了。弟弟，看到你，看出你。就咱俺都车上来刚刚明白，所以刚刚原来原来老几都买了，就是所以给刚刚的车上三的，俺的所以给辛苦也车上就辛苦的车上新买些，就现在天天现在就老把盘盘把干的出不呢，出土过来，就咱天天给他要女把的三月嘛都没得，就咱三月三月三的嘛，他们他们都就咱几土把那个现在也拍拍价钱不出土啥的，什么的，第一张呢？
SEMJEN地的东华山呀，咱SEMJEN地域主要咱到了，你三月过把头把钱，三节头把钱少，SEMJEN三月大的，咱们就江西SEMJEN发财过来。第二个三月的羊呢，羊呢，羊都三月大的过来，江西SEMJEN光把来过来。第二个羊呢，羊都当今，你们这个羊就一个羊，SEMJEN他们就三月过把头把钱，SEMJEN三月的，俺俺休息，这么忙也不是几个了，第几个要的？
所以 if you look now at the causes that are required to develop the mind of bodhicitta, so generally it's presented in terms of the six cause and one result, and the result is bodhicitta having six causes. But we've looked at the, maybe we can call it the preliminary cause, the one that is not counted amongst the six, and that is equanimity. And thereafter follow is the presentation of six causes, namely recognizing all beings as having been our mothers, recognizing their kindness, the wish to repay their kindness, and generating love, compassion, and the mind of special intention. So the equanimity plus those six are the causes required to generate bodhicitta. So if in the meditation one comes to this point now, where one takes responsibility for the welfare of others, one's taken responsibility to ensure that others attain a state freed from suffering and experience only lasting happiness, so this commitment is taken in a sincere way, in a genuine way, so it has a powerful impact on the mind. Now the thought goes to how to do this. Well, as we've heard earlier, helping through material needs, this will not solve the problems that beings really have. Beings need to know the Dharma, because it's through knowing the Dharma that they can develop the skills to generate minds within themselves, abandoning cyclic existence, striving for liberation, etc. So in a way we can help materially, this we certainly should do, because that is required. But primarily, one needs to be able to teach the Dharma to others. So in order to be able to teach the Dharma, one needs to know all the aspects of the Dharma. One needs to be very educated, and not just in terms of knowledge, but in terms of experience. In other words, one needs to develop the qualities of the Dharma within oneself, as well as eliminate one's own problems and difficulties and suffering. So one needs to develop oneself spiritually, eliminating all faults completely and developing all qualities completely. So it's this way, through having knowledge and experience, one will progress to and eventually attain Buddhahood. And that is where one will be the most skilled of guides. So then one will be able to benefit others in accordance with their particular predispositions, and one will be able to talk from a position of both knowledge and experience. So this is the process to develop bodhicitta. Go with its equanimity, those six causes, and then how am I going to actually do this? I need to strive for Buddhahood for the sake of others. And that is the mind of bodhicitta. And this thing needs to be meditated on again and again and again. And when one has meditated, going through this process repeatedly over a sustained period, eventually this mind will arise spontaneously, naturally within oneself. And this is then the uncontrived mind of bodhicitta. So when bodhicitta spontaneously arises within oneself, then one has uncontrived bodhicitta and one is counted amongst the bodhisattvas.
Now, in order to attain enlightenment,
there are, maybe we could say, two groups of causes. The one is bodhicitta. So here, we've gone through all the processes, we've generated bodhicitta through committing to strive for enlightenment in order to free all beings from suffering. And then the second group of causes that are required for enlightenment is to develop the practices of generosity, ethical conduct, patience, joy, perseverance, etc. The more one develops love and compassion within oneself, the stronger these minds will be, and thereby the stronger our mind of bodhicitta will be. So as we grow and develop these minds of love and compassion, our bodhicitta itself also grows and develops. Moreover, the stronger then our bodhicitta is, the stronger will be our application in developing the mind such as generosity, ethical conduct, etc. So there is this this relationship between these three, love and compassion, bodhicitta, and the six perfections. As the minds of the first step grow and strengthen, this has an impact on the power of the next step, which has the impact on the power of the step thereafter. So if one has developed strong love, or as one develops strong love and compassion, then one's bodhicitta will be that much more powerful. And then with more powerful bodhicitta, then generosity, etc., will also be that much more powerful. So what is the relationship then between bodhicitta and the six perfections? So with this powerful love and compassion and resulting bodhicitta within oneself, then it's very clear that there's a strong, overriding, dominating wish to help others alleviate themselves from suffering, help others attain a state of lasting happiness. So with this, it manifests in oneself in a powerful manner, then one will wholeheartedly look for ways to help others. So for example, the practice of generosity, wanting to others to be freed of suffering and to experience lasting happiness, one will practice the various forms of generosity so as to achieve this. Similarly, with strong love and compassion in oneself, the thought of harmful thoughts towards others are of course completely inappropriate. Having love and compassion for others, how can one have minds of harmful intent? And if one doesn't have harmful minds towards others, one has this mind of restraint, then one's mind will be ethical, one's speech will be ethical, one's behavior will be ethical. So therefore, the strength of our love and compassion on our bodhicitta has an impact on generosity, has an impact on our ethics. And the strong love and compassion within us, when we encounter problems and difficulties, for example, someone who's abusive towards us or trying to take advantage of us, we will very easily practice patience. Our mind will stay calm, it will stay subdued, it will stay unperturbed, despite the confrontation before us. And in this way, wanting to benefit this angry being before us, wanting this angry being before us not to suffer, our mind is not going to be getting disturbed and unhappy and angry, rather will respond in a way that is most beneficial. So therefore, the practice of patience is enhanced by the strength of love, compassion, and bodhicitta. Then, what's the impact on joyous perseverance? So here, having strong love and compassion for others, one will want to benefit them. One will want to develop oneself spiritually, engage in virtuous practices, develop virtuous minds within oneself in order to be of benefit to others. And this, then, is the mind of joyous perseverance, the mind that delights in engaging in virtue. Wanting to help others sincerely, wholeheartedly, being dominated by this thought, then one will want to engage in virtuous practice and take great delight in doing so. So therefore, love and compassion has a powerful impact on joyous perseverance. And as we heard earlier, when the mind of bodhicitta then culminates in this taking responsibility for the welfare of others and how to do that, one needs to strive to become a Buddha in order to be able to benefit others, because a Buddha is the most skilled of guides. So to become a Buddha, one has to abandon one's own afflicted minds. One has to abandon them completely. The afflictions with their seeds and their imprints need to be completely abandoned. To do that, the fifth perfection of concentration is imperative. So wishing, having a strong dominating wish to benefit others, one then will overcome all obstacles to develop concentration, will be able to develop concentration much more easily, because one knows without concentration one's own afflictions cannot be abandoned, and thereby the benefit one can bring to others is so much less. The similar train of thought to the sixth perfection, that of wisdom. Because to overcome the afflicted mind, one has to meditate on selflessness. And one needs to do so with the power of a concentrated mind, of a single-pointed mind, but one has to develop the wisdom realizing selflessness. So powered with one's motivation, powered by love and compassion for others, and wanting to eliminate one's afflictions completely so that one can spiritually progress and be of ever greater benefit to others, one develops wisdom, one meditates on selflessness. So this is how there's this relationship between the minds of love and compassion, that the stronger we develop these within ourselves, the stronger the mind of bodhicitta will be within us. And this then has an ever stronger impact on the six perfections.
What I've just presented now,
hopefully it's clear, not only the importance of love and compassion, but the importance to strengthen these minds and seeing the benefit that comes from these minds if they grow in strength. So hopefully that's clear. So then the question would be, so how can I strengthen love and compassion? We've heard about how to generate love and compassion, how to make these minds then ever stronger. So this then is presented in the seventh verse. Swept away by the currents of the four powerful rivers, tied by the tight bonds of karma so hard to undo, caught in the iron net of self-grasping, completely enveloped by the total darkness of ignorance.
So Lama
Tsongkhapa is saying to us here that so you now have generated this wish, wanting all beings to experience only happiness and to be freed from suffering. In other words, generated these minds of love and compassion. So then one needs to think about, so what is the situation of beings? What is the situation that beings find themselves in right now? What types of suffering do they experience? And what are the causes of the suffering that they experience? Let's look at the first line here. Swept away by the currents of the four powerful rivers. So if we think of a powerful river, maybe we've seen this on television, then if animals or people are caught in this middle of a fast flowing river, there's nothing they can do. They can't just put their hands up and make the water stop. They are trapped within this fast flowing water. They are defenseless. They are powerless. So this is a situation likened to what all sentient beings find themselves in right now. So all sentient beings are trapped, powerless, without freedom within their current situation. And that is a situation where we are controlled by the strong current of our own afflicted minds. And this is because whatever we say, whatever we do, the mind that is involved with those verbal and physical activities is accompanied by afflictions. So we are caught, we remain trapped within this powerful current of our afflicted minds. And this isn't something we can just snap our fingers and they disappear, but rather we stay bound within or trapped within this powerful current of our afflictions. And despite appearances, we don't have freedom. These afflictions pervade us. It's through these afflicted minds that dominate us so that we end up engaging in activities that bring harm to others. So we may speak or act in an abusive manner, deceive others, take advantage of them. And this, and acting then in this way, creates karma, and being non-virtuous, it creates negative karma. And this is what binds us in psychic existence, and this is what is referred to in the second line, tied by the tight bonds of karma. So it's karma that binds us. And the karma then, so the process then, to be clear, is that it's through our own afflicted minds that we accumulate non-virtuous karma. And then to look at it in a reverse direction, what is the cause of being born in samsara, in some cyclic existence? It is karma. And what is the cause for the accumulation of this karma? It's our own afflicted minds. So this process needs to be reflected on and come to be understood clearly.
Then ちょっと電力人家都上大位呢，哎，都上大位的，可能你有毛病，多啊，身边什么的，你那样人家都给，这个加拉入，古马消费呢，加拉古马消费，你没几个古马，今年俺就卡拉新布就说下去，俺那样子卡拉的，今年俺就马扎巴拉的了，你没几个人接些啥消费呢？这古马接啥消费，现在现在这个接些啥消费呢？这啥消费？俺就什么嘛当那啷么上，当个卡拉新布的可以接下别啥啥，那可能修两个多，现在洗头就养家俺就什么当呢？ 呀，我看是切不得，是，我但我呢，可能没看了的了呗，吃过几回了，但你对吧？吃过修结巴了，就算吃过几回，咱可点那也对吧？修修吃不修不结，点那什么点那来吧？咱可什么，你有尿毛不？没看了了，吃过几只，吃过几回给他姑妈家说的，那没看了看没啊？他吃过几呢？刚刚的用过的，他还要买的，生别个，当然没得了呀，可能马上结，我说你的结的，你结。 你去接的工作，但那你去接的，我到矿上去的矿上的新布，就是去矿上新布的去那，也不来三级，你那块的，第一个就加班的过来，就是你那个，咱们当过，就是你要么不读，是要么不接，要么不忘记，俺是来考啊，俺是六百几啊，这那些过来，然后就来爬山了，六百几的，俺是来要么不接，要么不忘记，现在刚刚的现在什么叫说起钱吧了，这里用过来是，这里用在咱们当下就。
Recently, we need to meditate and come to understand very clearly, in a way that's unmistaken to us, that the sequence that one is born in cyclic existence due to karma that we have accumulated due to our afflicted minds is because it's through knowing that. That we can generate love and compassion for others. Because it's in this way, through seeing this sequence, that from afflicted minds comes the accumulation of karma and the remaining bound within cyclic existence, that we understand that the cause of the suffering of others is their afflicted mind. And then, when this understanding is very clear to us, we can apply to situations that we experience. So let's say someone gives us a hard time. They maybe it's a colleague at work or our employer or someone at home, and they speak to us in an abusive manner, or they belittle us. They treat us in a way that it would generally be considered unacceptable. Then, if we sit in meditation, we think about, so why did they say that? Why did they act in that way towards me? And not as in the terms of so what's going on in their life, why did they act in this way, but what was happening in their minds. And this then would have been, their minds were dominated by the afflictions. Possibly they were angry, maybe with us, maybe justifiably, maybe not. That's not the point. The point is, at that moment, this person was angry. And because they were angry, they were suffering. Because they were angry, they spoke to us in an inappropriate manner or looked down on us, belittled us. And then from this, they accumulate negative karma that will result in unwanted suffering. So thinking like that, and again, just going to the level of seeing that they were angry, not why were they angry, just that they were angry. Then we in return will not get angry with them. Or if we have got upset, on a meditation cushion then, that anger will dissipate due to greater understanding for the suffering that this being was experiencing and the negative causes that they will be creating for the future. And similarly, when others act to us in a different manner, in a way that we don't like, for example, if someone steals something from us, or if someone takes some delicious food that we were looking forward to enjoying ourselves, then the normal way we get upset because something that we find useful has been stolen, or something we are looking forward to enjoying has been taken from us. When you take a moment on our cushion and we think, so what was going on in their mind? And in this case, they would have had the mind of attachment, the mind of desire, wanting something. And that desire dominated their mind and they acted upon it. And so their mind was disturbed, it wasn't peaceful, it was dominated, desiring something. They then engage in a non-virtuous activity. They accumulated negative karma that can only ripen in suffering. So when we think like that, we're not going to be angry with this person for taking something from us that we didn't want to give away. Rather, we'll feel compassion for them, knowing that at that time they were suffering with their mind dominated by an affliction. They've created negative karma, which will lead to further suffering. So now our mind is loving towards them, it's compassionate towards them. And in fact, mentally, we'll be able to quite readily give to them whatever they have taken. And in our mind, we can let go of what we have lost, and we can, in fact, even generate a mind of happiness that this being who so desired something now has it. So their desire was fulfilled. May all their desires be fulfilled. May they experience lasting happiness. And in this way, our mind is not at all afflicted, but we're rather generating love and compassion for others. And the third line here, caught in the iron net of self-grasping. So this line then points out the root cause of all our afflicted minds. It's this ignorance of self-grasping. And here the analogy is, so we've had a few analogies. We've been been caught in a powerful river. We've then been bound, which are the afflictions, bound by our karma. And now we come to the root cause of these afflicted minds. And that is likened to be caught within an iron net. So we know from animals who are trapped in a trap, or fish in a net, they cannot escape. If they're in a net, they may be able to swim around, but they cannot escape. And all the more so if it's made out of iron. This is the situation that we find ourselves in with the self-grasping mind of self-grasping ignorance. Trapped within this mind of self-grasping ignorance, this brings this analogy serves the purpose to show how pervasive this self-grasping ignorance is. Just like someone trapped inside a net and cannot escape, we too are trapped by this pervasive mind of self-grasping ignorance. And this self-grasping ignorance, or this ignorance of self-grasping rather, this ignorance of self-grasping, it's from this that all the myriad afflicted minds come. So the root cause of all our afflicted minds is our ignorance of self-grasping. So what is this ignorance of self-grasping then? Well, let's take some, or rather, sorry, let's look at how from this ignorance of self-grasping our other afflictive minds come. So let's look at anger. If someone harms us, I was harmed. So here we have this ignorance of self-grasping, and here the I was harmed. Because I was harmed, we get angry. Or if a loved one of ours was harmed, or spoken to abusively, etc., then we get angry because my loved one was harmed. So we have the I and mine. So I was harmed, or something part of me, my, was harmed, anger arises. So because of the self-grasping, anger arises. Similarly, with attachment. Have a strong desire for something, I have strong desire. I want, I need this. And with this strong desire that I want, my desire has to be fulfilled, then one steals, one engages in deceitful activity, etc. So here we see how anger and attachment, they come from this ignorance of self-grasping. I want, I don't want. Or if we strongly want something, I want it, and then someone stops us from getting that, we get angry because my wishes were impeded, my wishes were blocked, and then we get angry, first full of attachment, then anger. So this, hopefully from this we can see how our afflicted minds, oh, and there's a third example, sorry, take that of pride. So pride arises from being, for example, from being praised, and so someone praises oneself and one feels, oh, that's quite true, I am quite wonderful. And so this comes from believing in this truly existent self. So we have the eyes being praised, the afflicted mind of pride arises. So this shows how, this firstly shows how all the afflictive minds come from this ignorance of self-grasping. And that then shows this crucial importance of this ignorance of self-grasping. And that then is likened to this net, this iron net that we are trapped within. The fourth line continues this analogy of this analogy, completely enveloped by the total darkness of ignorance. So ignorance here is likened to total darkness. And why total darkness? One, that it's blinding, we cannot see, and two, it's enveloping, it's all encompassing. So if we think of the rare situations we've been somewhere that it is so dark that we cannot see our hand before our face, that's the kind of situation that is invoking. And ignorance here obscures us so that we cannot even metaphorically see our hand before our face. And then with ignorance so enveloping us, of course this will lead to afflicted mind after afflicted mind arising. And from these afflicted minds, we accumulate the causes for suffering. And that brings us then to the eighth verse. Endlessly reborn in cyclic existence, ceaselessly tormented by the three sufferings, thinking that all mothers are in such a condition, generate the supreme mind of enlightenment.
So
Looking at the first line, endlessly reborn in cyclic existence. So yeah, through this ignorance of self-grasping, which is like being trapped within an iron net, totally enveloped in darkness, this ignorance of self-grasping leads to the continual arisal, or endless arising of afflicted minds, which in themselves then lead to the accumulation of contaminated karma. And this keeps us bound within cyclic existence. And it's for this reason that we continue to circle in cyclic existence, repeatedly born again and again and again, without any wish, without any control, without any freedom, within the state of cyclic existence pervaded by suffering.
Ceaselessly tormented by the three sufferings. These two lines should be read together. Endlessly reborn in cyclic existence, ceaselessly tormented by the three sufferings. Because being reborn in itself is not the problem. The problem is that we are reborn in cyclic existence, and cyclic existence is pervaded by the sufferings. So we ceaselessly tormented by the suffering of suffering, the suffering of change, and the all-pervasive suffering of conditioning. So this is where we find ourselves, and it's because of this ignorance of self-grasping leading to the rise of our afflicted minds, and accumulation of karma that keeps us trapped and bound in cyclic existence, tormented by the three sufferings.
kāsūrē, ngāsū sāṁ nē sēm chō kye pār chē, dēne dūs chē nē gyumchē sāṁ tāṁ yō tē, dēne jāngshū sēm kye hu yō gyumchē, dēne sāṁ tāṁ chē jāngshū sēm gōṁ hu rē chē.
The last two lines, thinking that all mothers are in such a condition, generates the supreme mind of enlightenment. So this then just builds on what we've been hearing now over some days. So see here that sentient beings, all sentient beings, ourselves and others, are in this position that due to our ignorance, all these afflictive minds keep arising, and just their mere presence, or if we act on them, it leads to accumulation of karma. And this karma ripens, and we keep getting a reborn in psychic existence, where we continue to suffer. And this has been happening since beginningless lives, and it's happening for all ordinary sentient beings. And the root cause of all the suffering, and this continued perpetuation of suffering, is the ignorance of self-grasping. And sentient beings, whilst wanting to have happiness, and not doing the best they can to achieve happiness, because they don't have freedom, because they remain bound and trapped and controlled by this ignorance of self-grasping, lacking freedom, they continue to create the causes for further suffering. And they continue, therefore, not to experience their longed-for lasting happiness. So reflecting like this and seeing how that applies to all our kind and precious mothers, we generate bodhicitta, generating this strong and powerful wish to strive for enlightenment in order to lead all sentient beings to a state freed of suffering, a state where they achieve lasting happiness.
Chisan dāzi mārī pādi pāṅgū gudūs, tā dī mē bāsū gudūs, dī dūngā yā gyūtō dī rē shās, dī mā pāna tāp mī dūs, dī pāpā yinā, dēne ngā dū chāsāng dī gī dēmbā, dī gī dēmbā tū gudūs, chisan dī pāṅgū gudūs, tā dī pāṅgā gārīs pāṅgū rē yā lāna dā mē bā tō bī gī tāwa, tōng yī tō bī shērā, gōm chē nā dī pāṅgū gudūs, chisho tā.
These afflictive minds that lead to the accumulation of karma and all our suffering, minds such as attachments and anger, seeing the faults of these, none of us will want to experience them because we don't want to suffer. We see that there is no benefit to anger. Anger is never justified. And attachment, it deceives us. It brings no benefit. It harms us. And the root, so all these afflictive minds need to be abandoned. And the best way to abandon them is to destroy the roots, because we've come to see that they come from one mind, this ignorance of self-grasping. When this mind is eliminated, no further afflictions can arise. So this mind, this ignorance of self-grasping, needs to be destroyed. If we want to achieve lasting happiness, if we want to be of a meaningful benefit to others, we have no other option than to destroy this ignorance of self-grasping. It's only through destroying this ignorance of self-grasping that we ourselves can achieve the desired for lasting happiness, and we can be of true benefit to others. So how then to destroy this ignorance of self-grasping? That is to cultivate and develop the wisdom realizing selflessness.
Gom, Janshu Sem, Janya Gom Diva Samji, that is a new mobile Tassin Maribat Batuma, Samja Tam Sanjo Goba Topa, Chibekat, Samgine, Gom Divine, Chisan, Oko Dami Betawadi, Dazin di Batu Omar, Chisan Dazin Pala, that is a new Jung,
So we've been speaking a lot today then about the development of bodhicitta, but no matter how powerful one's bodhicitta becomes, no matter how strong one's aspiration is to achieve enlightenment for the sake of others, this mind will not be able to not only not achieve enlightenment, but not be able to eliminate the ignorance of self-grasping. So the process here is that first, as we've been hearing, one needs to develop the mind of definite emergence. And the more powerful the mind of definite emergence is, the more powerful arisal of bodhicitta is. But here it's also important to say that this sequence is definite. One has to generate definite emergence first in order to be able to realize bodhicitta. Because one has to understand this process of cyclic existence, its causes, and why we suffer, the suffering of samsara, and the causes of that suffering. So this is required to develop definite emergence, and without that, one can't develop definite emergence. And without that understanding, one cannot develop bodhicitta, because one doesn't understand the suffering situation that other beings are experiencing, which is the same as ourselves. So therefore, the sequence is definite. First definite emergence, and then bodhicitta. But as was just said, that no matter how much we meditate on bodhicitta, how powerful our mind of bodhicitta is, Buddhahood cannot be attained. For that, one also needs the third principal aspect, the correct view. So to develop this, one needs to meditate on emptiness, develop the wisdom realizing emptiness or the wisdom realizing selflessness. And with that mind, then together with definite emergence and bodhicitta, enlightenment can be attained. So how to develop this wisdom realizing emptiness? We'll look at that tomorrow. So Lord Buddha himself, he said that you are your own protector, you are your own enemy. So
当然你关系是说说关系的所以说给你们这三大我现在那边就控制在你们都是没三大的现在你们有什么关系现在你们这边去怕送钱你那个控制给嘛就要么不给嘛就怕送给你给三大当然你这边现在特别三大当然现在你们这边送了钱这边送了钱
되는
The reason the Buddha said that you are your own enemy or we are our own enemy is because that, so first of all, what is meant by an enemy? So an enemy is whatever makes us unhappy, and this so this would generally refer to our own afflicted minds. So without abandoning these afflicted minds, which are the source of all our unhappiness and all our suffering, we continue to suffer. So therefore, as long as we don't abandon our own afflicted minds, we will continue to suffer. And therefore, we can be described as our own enemy. So, for example, in certain circumstances, we feel that generating and acting on afflicted minds is appropriate, is suitable, is correct behavior. Certain situations when perhaps society thinks anger should be shown. And this way of thinking, though, is very mistaken, and this we need to look at for ourselves. We need to see that, yes, at times one needs to stand up tall and talk in an assertive manner in order to prevent harm from coming or whatever the situation may be. But that doesn't need to be done with anger. If the mind is angry, there's no wisdom present, and then one is going to quite possibly make the situation worse, if not in the short term, certainly in the medium term. But in terms of the long-term consequences from the karma accumulated, then it's clear that anger is never justified. It only brings harm. So the reason that the Buddha said that we are our own enemy is because the source of our unhappiness is within us. It's our own suffering, our own afflicted minds. And as long as we don't eliminate these, we will continue to suffer. And then the second part is, the Buddha said that we are our own protector. So the Buddha said that we are our own protector because we have the ability to restrain our own mind, to subdue our own mind, to tame our own mind. Moreover, we also have the ability to develop beneficial minds such as love and compassion. So as we tame and subdue our own mind, this then, how does this protect us? It means we no longer respond so forcefully to stimuli. In other words, attachment or the anger doesn't arise so strongly and then starts to arise weaker and weaker. Moreover, on the other hand, we develop beneficial minds such as love and compassion. And then through these two sets together, subduing our mind and developing beneficial qualities such as love and compassion, then we can not only achieve happiness for ourselves, but we have a beneficial impact on the lives of others. Moreover, the attainment of our spiritual goals, whether liberation or enlightenment, that starts to near. And as in all walks of life, If one has a wish to become skilled in that particular area, to become an expert in a particular area, there's a process one needs to go through. First, one needs to understand the subject enough to give rise to a powerful wish. Thereafter, one needs to continue to develop knowledge and gain experience of that knowledge. And then seeing some success in one's endeavors, this will hopefully serve to generate joy in one's life and encourage one to strive further and further. So this is the same for any area of life, whether it's sport or whether it's entertainment such as singing or dancing, or whether it's becoming skilled in a profession. One first needs to develop a strong wish, then cultivate knowledge, and as one cultivates knowledge, cultivate expertise, and do these together. And do so more and more, further and further, until one becomes an expert, becomes knowledgeable and experienced in that field. And that certainly is the case for ourselves, in that we are our own enemy, but we are also our own protector. So I'm hoping that you've seen a very clear similarity between these two principal aspects that we've looked at so far of definite emergence and bodhicitta. Because the meditation process is really pretty much the same. In order to generate bodhicitta, one needs to generate definite emergence. Once one has generated a definite emergence or been through the meditation on definite emergence, that understanding then is applied to others, and in this way we develop bodhicitta. So these two topics should be done together. So we start out, as we heard yesterday, so just to look at it in brief, we start out by thinking about the nature of cyclic existence and how cyclic existence is pervaded by suffering. So there we think about the types of suffering, etc. And then we see the ways that we experience suffering, and then we think about the causes of that suffering. We heard again about that today, about that the suffering comes from the contaminated karma that we accumulated due to our own afflictive minds, of which the very root cause is the ignorance of self-grasping. And then we spoke about the method to become free and the meditations to become freed of suffering. And so this is how we go through the process of definite emergence. And then after we've done that in our meditation, we take this mind, that is, this understanding that has risen within us, this wish of wanting to be freed from suffering and attain a state of lasting happiness that is liberated from suffering, and we apply this to others. So to generate definite emergence, we're thinking about our situation. And now, because we're going to start to generate bodhicitta in the same meditation session, we apply this understanding to others. Because others are just like us in wanting to be freed from suffering and attain a state of lasting happiness. Others are just like us in right now being trapped within cyclic existence due to the contaminated karma they have accumulated, due to their afflictive minds, which has their ignorance of self-grasping as its root cause. So in this way, we start to see that each and every sentient being is in exactly the same place as us, suffering, bound within in cyclic existence. And we have the analogies here, the powerful river, bound by the river of afflictions, bound by our karma, and within the iron net of self-grasping. So seeing how all beings are trapped in this way, we then start with the actual meditation on bodhicitta, and we had equanimity, and then seeing all beings as our mothers, and recalling their kindness, generating the wish to repay the kindness. And then we come to the mind of love, where we generate a strong and sincere wish, may beings only experience happiness. And then, when that has arisen, wanting them to experience happiness, this implies that they be free of suffering. So we meditate on compassion, generating the wish, may they be free of suffering. Thereafter, we generate the mind of special intention. We generate the mind of special intention, where we take responsibility to fulfill these commitments we've made, to ensure that beings experience only happiness and no problems or difficulties at all. And how to do this? We need to become the most skilled guide, the guide who has developed all good qualities, has all knowledge, and through this knowledge has eliminated all faults, and thereby has complete experience, has perfected their experience, in other words, become a Buddha. So at this point, we commit to striving for Buddhahood for the sake of others, in order to lead beings to a similar state. So there we give rise to the mind of bodhicitta. And the stronger that mind is that we have generated in our meditation, then the greater its impact will have on the practices of bodhisattva, generosity, ethical conduct, and so forth. And this we had presented today, that the stronger our love and compassion, the stronger our bodhicitta, and thereby the more wholeheartedly we will want to help others through generosity, the more wholeheartedly we will want to guard our ethics well, because we will be so committed to not harming others, etc. Thereafter, when we engage in this meditation, especially if we're doing it each and every day over a long period of time, we will see that these minds we are generating in meditation, we are becoming quite familiar with. And then when we go about our daily activities, whatever we're doing, wherever we go, that mind will be present within us and will start to have an impact on the way we relate to others. Moreover, during a quiet moment in the day, can just remind ourselves of our meditation that morning. Take a few seconds here and there, remind ourselves of our meditation in that morning, refocus our objective, and in this way we will start to see that the way we respond to problems and difficulties, the way we physically and verbally communicate to others, this all starts to change. And this changes because of a sincere wish arising in us more and more strongly, wanting others to be happy, not wanting others to suffer. And this then will guide our activities. We will communicate to others in an honest in a non-deceptive manner. We will help others whenever we can, according to our ability. And this all will come about through meditating in this way repeatedly over a sustained period. And as we see this change come to our way of thinking, first in meditation and then later out of meditation, seeing this progress, then this will inspire us to engage more and more in our meditation practice, and it will strengthen our commitment not to harm others, but to benefit them. So we'll take questions, Jane. That's fine. Okay, what are the four powerful rivers referred to in the first line of the seventh verse? Tsikche Dumpa Tsikang Dampo Shuk Dok Chuo Shi Gyungi Kier Deni Di Chuo Shi
Chuo Shi Se Deliya Jiki Dwecha Ki Chuo Stavi Chuo Se Shiru Tsir Kajil Dwecha Se Adang Dawa Se Adang Ningan Tsuki Dawa Lokwa Ngamba Tiki Ligurwa Deni Changa Lu Shiru Tsir Yor Dan Yuta Chasa
It just would refer to afflictive minds, but that could be summarized as wrong views and an attachment. I will give the names of the four wrong views tomorrow. Molly?
I mean, that verse 7 is described. Listening to teachings and practice and everything like that, I still find myself in that state of mind, especially when I'm left to my own device. So I'm just wondering, can he provide, how can I manage that so I don't get angry at myself? Because that anger is not good. Or oh my God, why can't I be this and
that? What's the best way to manage
an anxious mind? We all find our mind like that.
Okay. So anxious, I'm going to have to translate as to worry strongly. It's not quite the same, but that's as close as I'm going to get. But I can give the two examples you've given.
The other words that I would is uneasy, not wanting to face the world, wanting to hide.
Okay.
Their feelings of anxiety and fear.
Okay.
Not wanting to face the world, wanting to hide. I think when I'm anxious, that's what I want to do.
Okay. Then. In country still pore, yini perketokla la bios karikapo in tamsi chekin ti yankya ti kang dum ti che dum per kolare. Dene ye yangse simcho su chempo chegire. Dene simcho su chempo chetu. Dene and cutting a yakin talking mare. E dadung long langi yores. Kaze a lo umambo kirin la nangcho zang nangcho ki kola samki yore. Yan dadung long sapoyin dadung ni simpere di yaki rogi mare dini. Dini di yongdu dini perki toke kena su central segi mare yini di os drapore yini di drapore. Dini a simpere namdi kesu seki dope yo mare pelte kong nangla bei ki dope yo mare kong loko chungchung. Semchuk chagsong di dan drapo yang yin sere. Dini di kola kaluk tis nang loknang.
Power gohop de nige rawa de pe mas yakbu de lamsang a ji ye khonda ka ya da de ne de kale kha bu de tu min de ne ngi thus gong gong chen de kin ka ke li ge li je ka thu bu de sem be ge po bo ji ya da de ne ge nyam nen je gohop je ya da de ma ra yakbu de da sem be so su ge po bo ji de di ro da po bo ji ba ne de go sem ju ma sha ya le ya che ba ro ro ba da
So you need to, what would be helpful is if you develop your strength of mind. So to do this, remind yourself that on one hand, what you are trying to do is very difficult. It's not easy to change these ingrained habits, these habitual ways of thinking. So that's the first aspect. The second is to remind yourself that you actually have this opportunity now. You can develop your inner qualities. So these two aspects can help develop strength of mind.
Okay, thank you. Well,
can help
everything else he said before, too.
Okay. Okay, then thank you very much.
Thank you.